Blog Talk Radio.
To the Mana Pro Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens. My co-host is Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. Today is Thursday, April 12th. And I'd like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and, of course, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro. ManaPro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that ManaPro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life. Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
When you need an incubator, think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensey.com. Brensey spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensey.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensey, technology you can trust.
You have the chickens, the coop, and the run, but do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. Thank you very much for tuning in today. The chat room is slowly but surely filling up today, and we want to thank them for tuning in. Want to say hello, again, send a shout-out to all the great folks around the country that listen to us here on Blog Talk Radio, participate in the chat room, and listen to our archive show at iTunes.com. Podcast.com, Zoom.com. We appreciate you all. Want to send out a shout out to all the homeschoolers out there that listen to the show and incorporate the show with their curriculum on a daily basis. We thank you very much. Want to send out a shout out to all of our over-the-road truck drivers that actually listen to the podcast of the show. We get emails from them. I guess our show keeps you up at night when you're making that long haul, and we appreciate you listening, and thanks for the emails. And finally, want to send a shout out to all of the feed and seed stores around the country that stream this show live every day for their customers in their stores. I want to send a shout out to you guys. Thank you very much for doing that, and we hope your sales are good for your Chick Days event this year regarding backyard poultry. So I want to send a shout out to all you folks. And of course, it looks like Andreas is in the chat room tuning in live from Norway. Of course, we do have live listeners from all over the world, and we appreciate that. And we like to hear from them as well via email. So, again, thank you very much for tuning in. We've got a great show lined up for you today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We're going to welcome Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. He always comes the second and fourth Thursday of every month. We have Richard on, and his primary goal is to teach us all about sustainable living and solar power, wind power, using biochar in the garden, predators. He had a show about cast iron cookware and cooking. It's awesome, awesome, awesome information. We hope you have your spiral notebook out with CW right there on the cover, so you can take lots of great notes for today's show. But today we're talking about phenology for gardeners, basically letting nature tell you when to plant. And so, all of us who have or go out and buy a farmer's almanac, we actually sometimes plant by that. You know, when's the best time to plant the peas or the beans or the corn or whatever else we might be planting? And they use moon phases and weather and things like that. So today is going to be an awesome topic, and it couldn't come for a better time. I am delayed. You know, it's my busy time of the year. In fact, we're hitting the road tomorrow to head out to the Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival. Huge. They expect 20,000 people, and I'll be there doing the radio show live on location from the Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival in Moulton, Alabama, both Saturday and Sunday. And then I'll be speaking in 30-minute segments throughout each day about topics that relating to backyard poultry. But it's my busy season, meaning that I have not yet got my garden in. We had some folks walking through the neighborhood, and they were like, hey, you know, you were supposed to plant on Good Friday, or at least till your soil on Good Friday. And I'm like, I know. I was out of town, actually, and busy season. So I'm hoping next week I'll be able to, Jen and I and Caleb and our farm helpers will be able to get out there and actually get a garden planted. Next week, we thought the storm shelter, remember I was talking about that, the storm shelter we're having delivered, we're going to be featured on that television show on A&E, Shipping Wars. We're going to be featured on that show regarding our storm shelter. That was supposed to come next Tuesday, but I just heard from the producers of the television show they're actually shooting for next Saturday for that. And so it looks like I'll have, when we get back late Sunday night, I'll have most of next week, I believe, except for Thursday. I think we've got a trip up to Atlanta for some business on Thursday. I might just be able to get the garden harrowed and get some plants in. Obviously, all the great ones, tomatoes, corn, okra, and cucumber, and cantaloupe. Lots of squash, lots of great things that we got to get in the ground. And, you know, down here in South Georgia, we've got a whole, we can really have a year-round garden. You remember our fall garden was absolutely wonderful. We were really blessed with a wonderful fall garden. We donated a lot of the crops back to the city here, the residents of the city. And we talked, and we've got Piggly Wiggly that's actually going to be buying some of our crops this year as well. So we're definitely looking forward to that. So this show will interest me, of course, as well, based on when to plant. I think I'm already a little late for this area. I see a lot of folks have already got theirs in the ground, including the neighbor behind me. But with my travel schedule, with the taking the Chicken Whisperer show on the road, I've been a little bit behind on that. So maybe next week I can get our garden in and share pictures with you regarding all of that. But today, with Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine, we're going to learn all about that. Also, we are right smack dab in the middle of our Chicken Coops for Classrooms contest. We're the only ones that actually do this. We're very proud to be able to do this with our wonderful sponsors. We've done this about four or five times already throughout the years, where it's a complete prize package for a local public or private school. Okay, we've got fertile hatching eggs that are included in the prize package. We've got an incubator. We've got a brooder. We've got a chicken coop, and we've got an array of educational books for them to read and study on how to start their program, which then the books can go into the library for the students to check out once they're got going with the project. So that is going on as we speak. And we're actually going to be ending that contest actually midnight on Monday, April 30th. That will end. We'll stop taking nominations for schools on Monday the 30th at midnight, and then we anticipate giving the prize away to one lucky school somewhere in America on Friday, May 4th. Friday, May 4th is the prize day that we'll be calling a lucky school and giving that prize away. So it's a great prize package they'll be able to use this year after year after year with their students to educate them on the cycle of life and hatching chicks and candling. And it's just a great, great program. And we actually we love doing this every year. Chicken Coops for Classrooms right here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. I got lots of emails telling people, or from people saying, oh, I wish I could go to the Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival this week. Oh, I wish it would just sound so much fun. And I'm telling you, get those tents out. If you know, the hotels are pretty much booked. I told you there's only two hotels that I found in Moulton, Alabama, where the festival's being held. They're booked. And a lot of them up in Decatur, Alabama, are already booked. I was lucky to, you know, I procrastinated, as I always do. But I did happen to get a room in Decatur, about 30-minute drive, it looks like, 25, 30-minute drive from Moulton. So for the Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival, I think this is the eighth or ninth year that this has gone on. They anticipate well over 20,000 people attending. They have an awesome poultry show. This year will be the first year for their poultry show. It is sanctioned by the American Poultry Association and the American Bantam Association. There's, I think, a $4,000 prize payout, which is unheard of. And so we've got that going on the first time there. There's 15 bands. You guessed it, 15 bands on three different stages throughout all 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, which are going to be fabulous. Tons and tons of awesome food vendors, chicken everything you've ever wanted to eat. Chicken on a stick, chicken nuggets, chicken fingers, chicken this, chicken that, and a whole array of other food vendors there. And tons of chicken contest. They've got chicken roulette or egg roulette or something like that, where if you're the loser, you have to crack an egg on your forehead and it runs down your face. I saw that on their website. They have a Little Miss Chick pageant. They've got a motorcycle ride. They've got a 5K run or something like that. I mean, all this great stuff over the three-day period. That's this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I believe the two main days are Saturday and Sunday. Somebody on my Facebook page was talking about, hey, is there a campground nearby? There was one just below Moulton, but they don't open till May, and so he's looking for a place to bring his camper and camp out there at the Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival. So if you're within, you know, 6, 7, even 8 hours, if you can, you know, bring those tents, find a place to camp out, what have you, it's going to be a fun, fun time. We'll have our own tent there. And again, we'll be broadcasting the radio show live on Saturday and on Sunday. And then we're just really, really, really looking forward to it. We hope you can come out and visit us. Stop by and say hello. We'll have some T-shirts we'll be selling. Actually, I believe for just $10. The show special when we go out and do live events. $10 bill is all it takes to get one of our shirts. They're $15 online because that does include shipping. And And so come on out and say hello at the Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival. So we've got that going on as well. Yes, I'm still working on the Chicken Whisperer Tour. Still working on that. I believe I've got the kind of an idea of where we're going to go. I have yet to start contacting our sponsors on it, and I'm looking at a date possibly in June when we're going to do this. At least we hope to do this. It is not set in stone yet. We're hoping we'll get a lot of sponsors on board, specifically maybe Tractor Supply, maybe a feed sponsor as well. ManaPro might be interested, and maybe a hatchery or two. We'll stop by the hatcheries and say hello and do the radio show from the hatchery. But we're looking at kind of like maybe not a coast-to-coast, but kind of a nationwide Chicken Whisperer tour maybe in June. And me and Jen are really looking forward to it. We're probably not at the point of purchasing a motorhome, but you can rent those. And I've been researching that a little bit where we can pretty much stay wherever we want to. Maybe we do the show in a Tractor Supply parking lot and stay there overnight and then head on out. But actually right now we're looking at possibly starting, I'm not really sure, because you can get some really good deals from these motorhome rental companies if you kind of go by their schedule. You know, oh, we need more motorhomes in Orlando, Florida, but right now they're all out in Arizona. So if you start in Arizona, they give you a boatload of free miles and a boatload of free days if you just get it back to Orlando in a certain amount of time. So we're looking at actually maybe doing that. But kind of the circle we're looking at making right now is if we start, say, in Atlanta, work our way out I-20 or I-10 out towards Texas, and then we won't quite get to the West Coast right now, what we're looking at, but we'll get out to Texas and then head up maybe to Denver and then head back I-70 back towards St. Louis and come on over to the coast and then come on down and swing down the East Coast back to Orlando possibly. So we'll just see how that works. We may just rent a car, drive out to Phoenix if that's where the best deals are, and then start in Phoenix and kind of go up to Denver and down I-70 and come back down the coast to maybe Orlando. But still all in the preliminary works. And you got that right, Career Lover. They've considered renting a motorhome, too. It's expensive, but still far less than buying one, maintaining one, paying insurance on one. I completely agree. May not get to the West Coast. Midnights, I'm not really sure, but we'd love to. Maybe if we pick the RV up in Phoenix, we can head over there and head up from maybe like L.A. up the coast, that beautiful drive up the coast, and then up to Washington State, you know, that type of thing. But I'm not sure the days if we'd have time to do that and then get clear back across the country. So we'll just have to see what happens. And nothing is in stone yet. The thing may not even take place, but we are actually researching it and contacting folks about it and working and talking and contacting the RV rental companies based on maybe they want to become a sponsor of the show. So who knows? We'll just have to see on how that runs. But we're kind of excited about that. But the more recent is, of course, the Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival coming up this weekend. So remember, no radio show tomorrow. We will be on the road, but we're going to make it up because there will be a radio show this Saturday and there will be a radio show this Sunday. I noticed they were publicizing at the Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival radio show Saturday and Sunday. I had just planned Saturday, but I'm going to be there Sunday anyway. And we've got the 30-minute educational snippets that we're doing throughout the day. So we'll try to fit in a radio show sometime on Sunday. I've never had a Sunday broadcast because for us it's normally church and lunch with family and it never ends up being a day of relaxation. I always find something that I've got to do to get ready for the week. But so even though there was no show yesterday or tomorrow, we'll have radio shows coming up this weekend on Saturday and Sunday, live from the Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival. Looking forward to that. So hopefully you can tune in. Also, there's always a different crowd on the weekend shows that we have when we hit the road. And so we hope you can tune in, meet some new folks that can tune in on Saturday and on Sunday that may not be able to turn in during the week for the weekday show. So join us if you can. I will be announcing those shows as well on our Facebook page at facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer. Since I got an email from Richard Frudenberger, he's got a meeting that may run late, so what we're going to do is we're going to get over here and do some chickens in the news, doing it now instead of towards the end of the show. We do have some chickens in the news for our chickens in the news segment, and so we post all of this on our on our Facebook page. Lots of Chickens in the News. Probably post more Chickens in the News than anybody else out there on the internet. We're very proud of that, keeping you informed of what's going on. Let me scroll down here. This is awesome. I love this story. And it goes real well with what we're doing now with our Chicken Coops for Classrooms contest. This comes to us from Oswego County today.com. And let me scroll down here. Which came first, the chicken or the egg? Which came first, the chicken or the egg? For students in Miss Walters' class at Parrish Elementary School in the Otmar Parish, Williamstown School District, that answer would be, why, the egg, of course. As a class project, the students have an incubator full of eggs, which will, in a short while, yield quite a few baby chicks. A special guest from the Cornell Cooperative Extension Center, Debbie Holliday, visited the class to talk to the students about the incubation process and development of the chicks inside the egg. She explained the different parts of the egg and their function as the chick grows until, at last, 21 days later, they peck or pip their way out of the shell. The students will need to monitor their eggs and turn them several times a day to ensure proper growth of the chick inside. Holliday brought a special craft project for the students to complete that featured a paper egg with a shell that can open to reveal a paper baby chick that the students could color. She also gave the students an informational brochure that they could take home and share with their family about the process. The Tractor Supply, located in Pulaski, generously provided the incubator for the project, and with the donation of special eggs from a local farmer, the class is eagerly anticipating the arrival of baby chicks in the very near future. It's awesome. Anybody that's ever done this, anybody who's ever actually hatched out baby chicks, knows how educational this can be for the teachers, for the students, for the parents, for the community. It is absolutely awesome and very educational for everybody that is involved. These pictures here are absolutely fabulous. They have on this news wire. So we encourage you to visiting our Facebook page and taking a look of this Chickens in the News segment story yourself. So we love doing that. That's, again, why we have the Chicken Coops for Classrooms contest, the only one like it on the planet. See, I had another one here as well. Ah, this one's a good one as well. Something to actually think about when you're buying your chicken at the store. This comes to us from the poultry site. I met these wonderful folks when I was at the back in January, the International Poultry Expo in Atlanta. We were there covering it all 3 days. The poultry site was a few booths away, and we met them and interviewed them on the radio show. This comes to us from the poultry site. The title of this story is Half of Supermarket Chickens Are Tainted with Poultry Feces. Half of all supermarket chickens are tainted with poultry feces. Comes to us in the U.S. Nearly half the chicken products marketed by national brands and sold in supermarkets are contaminated with feces, according to laboratory test results of chicken samples from 15 grocery store chains in 10 major U.S. cities. The testing was conducted by an independent analytical testing laboratory at the request of the nonprofit Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Okay, I never heard of them, but the physician. No, I think we've done stories about them before that where they've been involved. Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. PCRM investigated chickens from Purdue, Pilgrims, and Sanderson Farms. So they investigated chickens from Purdue, Pilgrims, and Sanderson Farms, as well as 22 other popular brands. Testing revealed that 48% of the chicken samples tested positive for fecal contamination, indicated by the presence of coliform bacteria commonly found in chicken dung. The bacteria species E. coli is a type of coliform bacteria and a specific indicator used by slaughter and processing plants to check for fecal contamination of food products and water. Chicken samples from every city and every grocery store chain tested positive. In Dallas, 100% of the chicken bought at the Kroger store tested positive for fecal matter. Okay, East Dallas Dave, I don't know if you're in the chat room. I'm not over there right now, but 100% of the chickens obtained in Dallas, 100%
were and tested positive for fecal matter. In Washington, D.C., that's up near, kind of not too far from Pat, 83% of the chicken bought at a Giant store and 67% of the chicken bought at a Safeway tested positive. Samples were also tested in Charleston, South Carolina, Milwaukee, Phoenix, Chicago, Denver, Houston, Miami, and San Diego. One in every two supermarket chickens is contaminated with feces. Meat packers can't avoid contaminating poultry products during production, and consumers are cooking and eating chicken feces in about half the cases. Tasty. Skinless chicken breast was particularly likely to have feces traces. Interesting. That's a neat point. Skinless chicken breast was particularly likely to have feces traces, and both organically produced and conventional products were frequently contaminated. The U.S. Department of Agriculture is now considering privatizing poultry inspection. The proposal would reduce the time poultry workers have to inspect each carcass for feces and could result in more contamination reaching the supermarket shelves. A 2009 USDA study found that 87% of chicken carcasses tested positive for E. coli after chilling and just prior to packaging. Every year, contaminated poultry products cause approximately 1.5 million illnesses, 12,000 hospitalizations, and 180 deaths. However, most people eating cooked chicken feces have no symptoms and are unaware of what they have actually ingested. So all of you who are on the East Coast eating lunch right now, maybe you're having a chicken sandwich. There you go. That was a part of our Chickens in the News segment. And boy, it's getting a lot of mention there in the chat room, too. Speaking of chat room, let's get over there and say hello to everybody. Andreas from Norway, Angela in Oklahoma, Ann Warner, Bard Rock, Critter Lover, East Dallas Dave. You're going to buy some chicken in Dallas today, Dave? 100%. Eating a chicken poo there. But we all are, let's face it. Several guests in the chat room, we invite you to actually register. Imagine that. Register with your Facebook account, your Twitter account, or open up a Blog Talk Radio account. We want you to register and join us in the chat room. You'll meet some new friends, or you can just sit over there and listen comfortably in the comfort of your own home. We appreciate you tuning in. We've got Janice. We've got Judy. We've got Kevin. We've got Kim. We've got Megan. Midnight's New Dawn Farm Girl. We got Picklefish. Haven't seen you in there in a while. Thanks for joining us again. We got Sweet Potato. And, of course, Walter. Gotta love it, Critter Lover. That's a good one. And so it's one of those things, you know, everybody knows that, you know, you see the reports. The average human swallows 1,900 spiders in their sleep over a lifetime. Or, you know, there's so many there's so much amount of bug particles that are allowed in a candy bar. You know, we see those studies out, you know, with mass production of our food and processing. You know, they have to allow we have to allow a certain amount of what I call bug butts. A certain amount of bug butts that are going to be in our food due to the processing. And my doctor once said, I went and saw him last month, he said, you know, it's amazing that humans aren't just a walking blog of pus because of the germs and nastiness we are confronted with on a daily basis. But our bodies are amazing. And it's sometimes maybe you think a miracle. So, but nonetheless, Chickens in the News, brought to you today by Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. All righty, we're going to go to a short commercial break. When we come back, we're going to welcome Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine, and he's going to tell us about letting nature tell us when to plant our garden. So we're really definitely looking forward to that. Stay with us, folks. We'll be back right after this short break from our sponsors.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's WAREMFGINC.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
And you can find all the great Ware products here. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com. Since 1921, Stromberg's has been a family-owned and operated business, providing quality poultry and poultry supplies to their customers. Today, the Stromberg family offers over 200 different breeds of poultry, including chickens, waterfowl, and game birds. They also offer poultry supplies for the beginner or advanced poultry keeper. Stromberg should be on the top of your list when it comes time to order. Shop online at www.strombergschickens.com or call today at 1-800-720-1134. Remember, that's StrombergsChickens.com.
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce, I'll don my super suit.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisper. Our guest today is Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine, and he joins us on the second and fourth Thursday of every single month, talking about living a sustainable lifestyle. And check him out online. That's backhomemagazine.com. You can subscribe there at the website. You can call in either way you want to do that. You know you'll love him when he's on the show. You'll love his publication even more. Backhomemagazine.com. Richard, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Okay, that's fine, Andy. I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely. We were talking earlier about our garden here and about how with my travel schedule here recently, I have not yet had time to put in the garden. In fact, some neighbors were walking by the other day and they said, you should have planted on Good Friday, or, you know, you should have tilled your garden on Good Friday. And I'm like, I know, I wasn't even in town. Da-da-da-da-da. You know, Grandpa always said, best not plant before Good Friday because there's always a blackberry winter that's going to come through and all these great things that people talk about when the best time to put in the garden. My neighbor behind me, I saw they've put some things in, I'm not sure what yet, in their garden. And I'm hoping next week, hopefully nature will say next week is the time to plant for me. But next week looks like I'll have some time to put some things in the ground for our garden, and I'm looking forward to that. But today's topic, we're talking about pretty much just that, kind of when to plant and using nature to tell us when to plant.
Yeah, it's actually a discussion of phenology. Phenology for gardeners, and you know, it covers a whole lot of ground here. But it's just a fancy way of saying you know, planting by the seasons and planting by the signs. And I did want to make it a point. It's not phrenology. Phrenology is as far as I know the study of characteristics of human behavior by analyzing their skull shape. You know, but that was quite a practice back in, I guess, around the turn of the century or even the end of the last century, is actually counting the bumps and the placement of the bumps on people's skulls and the shape of their skulls and being able to ostensibly determine their behavior possibilities or patterns or a lot of other things by their skull shapes and characteristics. But that's phrenology, and this is phenology. And I know the ology part's probably the same, but the beginning is different. So this is basically planting and growing by the signs of the seasons and other things. And it's actually really fascinating. And, you know, I've seen this studies of these things both in, you know, academic studies and analysis and whatever, and also just in living in the country. You hear folks all the time talking about, you know, about planting and when not to do things or when you need to be doing things, or just like you mentioned, you should have your garden in by Good Friday or whatever. But it even gets more specific. I mean, some of this, like I had purchased, my own self purchased a couple pounds of heritage potato seeds, you know, potatoes.
Seed potatoes?
And seed potatoes.
Uh-huh.
And I was trying to figure out when to put them in, and the person I bought them from said, well, you know, instead of trying to figure out what the temperature might be or the moon cycle or the, you know, rain pattern or whatever, she was saying when those, in our local region here, when those dandelions first start to come in, you get those potatoes in the ground and then you'll be all set. And I dutifully did that. I mean, I had, they started coming up about 2 weeks ago and I had the potatoes in the ground and, uh-huh. You know, I'm glad that's done. And, you know, basically it really applies to all that kind of thing. And we've sort of lost that.
Right.
We've lost that practice with the advent of, you know, soil testing and pH levels and weather, you know, weather patterns being analyzed to the nth degree and
sure.
future forecasts and all that. And all that's important. But the, you know, farmers who depend on their living for when they really basically when they plant and when they harvest their crops, and just home gardeners who, you know, go to a lot of effort to put their crops in and don't really want to see them destroyed by frost or you know, ruined by any other natural means, they, you know, they can really go by these signs and they do do real well. You know, you talked about an early spring freeze, and we just, up here in the mountains, we've just had exactly that. We've had, this would be last night, the second night, and I think we're going to see another one tonight of hard freeze. I mean, it's a three-day series here, so the first night we had a 27 degrees, and this is
really?
after 80-degree days. We've had 78, 80 degrees uh-huh. Consistently for a couple of weeks now, and I've got some small fruit, you know, apple trees, and, you know, I was out there with the sheets covering the trees up and, you know, tying them up so we don't, with the muslin so we don't have... you know, hard frost get to them, and I'll probably end up doing it again tonight. But, you know, I would have watched some of the signs and probably would have figured that out. I just listened to the weather, and I figured, okay, I can fix it. But, you know, there were signs that would indicate. I had been told in the very beginning of March not to be too eager about planting because there was going to be an early April freeze, and lo and behold, may not have been the first week in April, but, you know, it was still before the 15th, so here we go. You know, I'm just trying to think. The phenology is derived from the Greek word pheno, which means to appear or to show. So that's why we're looking at the signs, what you're showing us, you know, what to do. And I find it pretty interesting. This is just taken from an article, one of the articles we've had on this, more recent one. The Japanese have been tracking the dates of their cherry blossoms for over 1,200 years running. So, and
wow.
they're keeping a record and calendar of when, you know, when the blossoms come out, and also making notes of what other signs, what other plant life or insect life is coming out at around that time, so they can link the one type of activity to the other, and that's basically all we're talking about with phenology is just that. In more modern times, we've got naturalists like Aldo Leopold and Henry Thoreau, all studying phenology and making commentary based on these natural signs. So it goes beyond the accuracy of temperature specifics
uh-huh.
or what dates things might happen. It's like a broad observation of the whole of the whole aspect
so
of your area.
Would it be like they're keeping record like, well, on this particular year, we got in the month before 2 inches of rain. And so we saw that year they bloomed a little bit earlier or maybe later. And so they're looking at all the characteristics each year, not just, okay, they bloomed this week this year and this week next year, but they're actually compiling what may have happened that year and then studying. So maybe 50 years from now, we're like, the last 4 times we got 2 inches of rain in February, well, they bloomed the end of March instead of the 1st of April. Something like that?
Yeah, exactly. In fact, it is a broad reliance on things other than just single scientific analysis, which tends to be scientific analysis is very accurate, but it tends to be as much science as it tends to be mono culturistic. In other words, a scientist is so well trained and so astute in his field, his or her field, that they may be just looking at temperature, and they sort of got their radar locked in on temperature, and they're not really considering what's going on beyond that. And in fact, so many scientific breakthroughs are the result of cross pollination, so to speak, between different sciences. When you've got one group of scientists suddenly have a conference and meet when the water oceanography people meet with the climatology people, there's suddenly all sorts of things are discovered because they're going between disciplines. And that's exactly what phenology has been doing all along. So with your specific example there, it's not just so the blooming of a dandelion, for example, it doesn't just take into example the day or the week that may have happened 1 year and then the next year it might have changed. They're looking at temperature patterns during a successive, observation of 1 year to the next. They're looking at soil temperature, rainfall, the length of daylight. All this stuff takes into account, plus the fact that they're making critical observations of what else is happening in that area at the same time. So if the dandelions are blooming at the same time that a certain type of aphid is appearing on a locust tree or something, then that observation is made too. And if these things occur and recur and recur, then it's a sign. And so we're looking at all these things happening and possibly planting a certain crop after these occur or before these occur or when they start to occur is basically what's going to turn out to be a pattern that we want to follow.
I wonder, and it's so kind of new, I think, that there probably hadn't been any studies, but this popped in my head when you were talking about this. I wonder how the lack of or the disappearance of bees is going to affect the study and how they may incorporate this bee shortage with their scientific findings for the last few years being that we have a apparent bee shortage. Obviously that with pollination I would think would affect the science of it, and if they're taking that in consideration with their science of this bee shortage we've got going on.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, I know in the apiary world, I mean, people are actually counting, taking pollen samples, observing, mm-hmm. Physically going out and watching and seeing, taking samples off the bees' legs, scraping mm-hmm. them off the legs and sampling them, getting observations of counting how many visits to a flower that a bee will make in a specific test site, whatever. So all that's being taken care of in that one field, but it's anyone's guess as to how that information is going to be blended with information from, climatologists and crop scientists and whatever to put it all together. And I know in the almond industry or the apple industry, for example, and I'm sure many other areas of agriculture, they depend very very heavily on bee pollination. And in fact, they import, they'll purchase the use of a bee for the pollination period. So they they get the use of the hives of colonies for that time. So I know they're aware of that, but it's anyone's guess as to how broad a view that's going to
right.
make and how they're going to work it all in. But eventually that does happen. I mean, fortunately for us, I mean, there's accurate records are kept of each individual discipline. So at some point somebody can sit down and start putting it all together. And it may well uh-huh. be done at this point now. I mean, it's, the people don't go to school for, 6 to 8 years for nothing, you know. that's a good question. I wouldn't be surprised if they do take it all into account. Mm-hmm. But let's just go down some examples. You know, probably
okay.
That's some practical examples. Just in a general way. The other thing I'd say there, all these signs they change slightly with each location. So some obviously some type of crop or some type of flower or tree is going to be different, say in Alabama, than it is in Oregon. So in Oregon, it's going to be a totally different scenario, but it may be the same crop with a different set of circumstances surrounding that crop. So instead of being the sign of an aphid showing up, it may be a different kind of an insect or whatever. But but the phenology exists in its own form in every single region, and even in the microclimates. I mean, every region has its own subregion, and every subregion has a little microclimate. So in some, like in valleys, it's going to be a little different than maybe in the same county, and a little different than the same situation maybe on top of a ridge or up in a higher mountain like we have here. So, but let me just get some of the more practical applications so people can understand what I'm talking about. Appropriate planting times. This is for planting. It's this harvesting and planting. So those are the two important things that's going on. But for now we're going to be planting things. One example is planting peas when the forsythia and the daffodils are blooming.
Uh-huh.
And in some areas, like I have quite a bit of water around me, a couple of creeks and a pond. So when those spring peepers come out, that's the same as when the forsythia comes, the daffodils
uh-huh.
come out. All this happened within the past 2 weeks. The peepers are just starting to come now, and just the past, I'd say, 4 days, really, and the dandelions have been out for a week or more, and the forsythia has been out for almost 2 weeks. So, if I had peas to plant, now's the time to do it. Plant potatoes when the first dandelion blooms. That's exactly what I did, and that's a general observation. I mean, that's just, that's maybe not just for my area, but for everybody.
Right, sure.
And a lot of this does apply. If you've got the crop and you've got whatever I'm saying, like forsythia or lilacs mm-hmm. or whatever, dandelions, then go for it. Beets, carrots, and col crops, any kind of red cabbage and col, whatever. Lettuce and spinach, do plant them when the lilacs are in the first leaf. That's another good broad sign. Here's an interesting one that I've heard a lot of it. You should be planting corn when the oak leaves are the size of a squirrel's ear.
Okay.
Sort of broad. I mean, we all know how big the squirrels are in their area. We had gone up to New York City to visit some relatives at Thanksgiving, and just amazed at the size of the city squirrels. I mean, they're like small dogs. Because they there's really no lack of food. I mean, people feed them constantly in the parks, and there's all sorts of scrap and stuff available. Those things are huge. So I guess the ear of a city squirrel would be a lot bigger than the ear of a country squirrel. But anyway, there probably aren't any oak trees in New York anyway, so it doesn't matter. And nobody's even going to be planting corn, as far as I know, there. So it doesn't grow in concrete, as far as I know. So I guess we're only keeping it in mind for country folk. Beans, cucumbers.
Course, country folk are probably more apt to actually be squirrel hunting and preparing them and eating them to be able to see the squirrel's ear a little up close anyway, versus
yeah,
maybe
exactly, yeah.
Just
pay more attention to livestock, exactly, or to what's out there. You plant your beans, your cucumbers, and your squash, the seeds, when the lilacs are in full bloom. And that's, another good message. For transplanting, eggplant, melons, and peppers when the irises start to come out.
Huh.
Plant tomatoes when the lily of the valley plants are in full bloom. And we all know the lily of the valley. They're the upturned little cups, little white delicate cups, and the broad lily leaves. And, it's a good tomato planting time. Now, we were talking a little bit before about some of the intercorrelation between insects and some of the other things going on here. So as far as like pests go, when the chicory flowers open, we have a lot of chicory in the South. I don't know, I'm not so sure about other regions, but when the chicory flowers just start to open, that's also the time to be look to be looking out for the squash vine borer moths, so you can be, you know, dealing with them when the flowers of the chicory are just starting to open up. Grasshopper eggs hatch at about the same time that the purple lilac blooms. So when the common lilac is coming out, then you're thinking about maybe putting some of that soap solution on the, you know, get those grasshopper eggs washed off there and you know, knocked off. Japanese beetles often arrive when the morning glory vines just start to climb. I didn't know that.
Uh-huh.
You know, I haven't really seen. I think Japanese beetles go through sort of cycles too. I mean, I'm not really sure how much of a problem they've been here. I know we did have a bunch in the past couple of years, but you know, that they tend to wax and wane. Mexican bean beetles, they're going to appear when the foxgloves start to flower. So that's another good little, you know, good little tidbit there. And it even goes further as to that. I mean, just, of course, you can listen to the weather report and get the longer term forecast for the rain or the you know, general weather. But even just by looking at the signs around you, and you know, even closer to the actual event, tree leaves start to turn up. You know, I've seen that myself many
uh-huh.
times. You know, the leaves start to turn up when the weather, you know, it's either the humidity or the barometer changes, whatever. But the leaves start to turn up. Toads appear in large numbers. You know, they're getting out there. The rocks seem to have an appearance of glistening. You know, they have that sort of sweaty look to them. Humidity's going up, and even just the old standby. You know, red sky at morning, sailors take warning, and red sky at night, sailors delight. So, you know, in the early morning when you're seeing those red tinges at sunrise, you know the weather is changing for a storm, or at least wet weather, by the evening and or later. And then at night, when that's happening at night, then the next following day or so is going to be more favorable. So, you know, that's all old standby guidelines, and you know, it's really you know, really tried and true. I mean, there's very little you could argue with you know, all these little things.
Still there?
Yeah.
Okay,
I just cut out for a minute here.
Okay, very good. No problem. Yeah, I'm familiar with the, you know, the leaves turning up on the trees. You see that, you think, oh, there must be a storm coming or something like that. All the wives' tales and the things that are interesting. How accurate? Well, I guess it's accurate. I guess the Farmer's Almanac's kind of doing the same thing for their publication as well. When you look, whether it's be planning by the moon phases or and I guess they use more moon phase planning than anything else than say the wives' tales or the other studies. I think most of their charts are based on the moon, is it not? It's like your Farmer's Almanac is moon phase. So, you know, this week would be, or these 3 days or 4 days would be the best to plant peas or beans or whatever. All that's moon phase, not necessarily what we're talking about today.
Yeah, exactly. And actually it is, I mean, it's related. It's not,
right.
It's not the same thing, but it is very much uh-huh. related because the, I just wanted to mention before I forget this is exactly the kind of information that's in the almanacs. And it's not,
uh-huh.
it's not all, I mean, it is very strongly, moon phase related to
uh-huh.
tides and water in the soil and water in the ground table. It's all very scientific. You can call it folk knowledge and wisdom all you want, and it is that, but it's also, if you needed to verify that through scientific means, it's all provable. So that's what's good about the almanac too, is that you know it's all based on good science, even though maybe they don't realize it, but you know it is. And the stuff in the almanac, that kind of thing is exactly what we're talking about with phenology. I mean, you know, the planting zone maps and the average last frost dates they give and all that kind of thing on the seed packets are real broad and general, but the phenology has to do with more specifically with your area and with your specific situation. So, you know, and if you've been if you've lived in an area for a while, or by the same token, if you move to an area and you're new and you don't really know much about it, it would serve you well to hook up with some old timers and just, you know, whether that's at the garden club or the farmer's market or the you know, the curb market where you might be, you know, trading truck, you know, a tailgate market where you'd be buying some fresh produce or something like that, and just maybe have a little chat and get some idea of when the best time to plant things are, get some idea of the local signs. But if you
uh-huh.
have grown up in an area, or been there a long time, then you pretty much know that. And basically, you know, when you go out and do your own observations in your own yard, your own little micro environment there, and your own garden, it really is sort of fun to take note of what's happening when you're actually doing the planting. So you may have a dogwood tree or an oak tree or just some plant or something in the vicinity that you can use as sort of a marker. And so what is that plant doing? Like if I'm planting on April 6th in 2012, and that what's that dogwood doing at that point, or what's this lilac doing, or whatever. And you know, you sort of make a mark of it, make a note of it. So you might even want to draw a map. I mean, here's where I'm putting my garden, and this tree is over here in this corner, you know, 30 feet away or whatever. And these plants are over here, the blueberries are over here, and they're, you know, 25 feet over in that direction. And year after year, when you do your garden, the next year you can make the observations at these known spots and indicators. So you can see so if I plant maybe April 15th the next year, then you can see where am I with the dogwood now. Or maybe if I planted as late as March or as early as March 28th, then I'd say, okay, what's the dogwood doing here? So you get a pattern going, you get an idea of what's going on in your exact location. So after 5 or 6 years, you've got a good little record going, and that's just a matter of good garden record keeping.
How about insects or different insects?
Well, yeah, that's the other thing. You can notice. You can notice when the appearance of, you know, beetles, a certain kind of a beetle or a squash, a boring insect or whatever appears, aphids, whatever, and you can notice, okay, when is that happening? What other events are happening in and around my garden at that time? So we can just keep a record of these kind of things. So it's even more specific to your area than the county might be, you know. It just because it's right there where you live, and so it's a real tool. I mean, it's not just a wives' tale kind of a thing, I think it's a valuable tool. Then we talked a little bit about the moon. You mentioned the moon, and I think I can get into a little bit of that because it is very closely related, and there's some you know, very very specific occurrences happening with the waxing and waning of the moon, and it all has to do really with water. The moon does exert a gravitational pull, as we all know, and the thing to remember, it's pretty. I mean, there's some really great books on planting by the moon and gardening by the moon. We had carried one. We don't have it anymore, but there's one more of a written by some local people here. It's called Raising by the Moon. And then there's a book called The Lunar Garden, Planting by the Moon Phases, Living by the Moon. And the Farmer's Almanac, of course, has as you mentioned, a lot of the calendars are based on gardening by the moon. But, you know, it's not that complicated. It's pretty simple. The new moon always rises at sunrise. The first quarter moon rises at noon. The full moon rises at sunset, and the last quarter rises at midnight. So it sort of always, you know, always follows that. And you always have your waxing moon and your waning moon. The waxing moon is the when the moon is at its closest to its Earth, and that's when the tides are going to be pulled, you know, a lot more higher or a lot higher than they would be when the moon is further away. So the tides reach their highest points very specifically, and any fisherman, you know, is aware of this. Every 14.6 days, about twice a month, the tides reach their highest point, and then they fade away. So the rainfall cycles actually copy the tide cycles, and so that's all related to the moon as well, because the tides are related to the moon. So there's certain events that the moon follows its cycles, as I said, and the cycle is actually only, it's not quite 30 days long, it's 29 and a half days long. So the moon's waxing in the first and second quarters, and it's waning in the last two quarters. So there's certain things you do when the moon is rising or waxing, and there's other things you do when the moon is waning. And we can go through, you know, some of those. I'm not sure how much time we have, but just
plenty of time.
You know, whatever.
No problem. Go right ahead.
Okay. You know, for the waxing moon, you want to plant your lawn seeds and wheat and grain seeds. Those grain and leaf type plants, lawns and wheat grains like rye and that kind of thing. So that would be as the, you know, as the water is building up in the soil, essentially. Leafy vegetables and flowers. All this is going to be the waxing moon. So leafy vegetables and flowers, they produce all their product above ground. They don't rely on extensive root development. For increasing more productive or more aromatic flowers, they'd be planted in the first quarter of the waxing moon. Raspberries, blackberries, and gooseberries planted in the second quarter of the waxing moon. And, you know, we have this in the magazine. This is just one of, you know, many articles, but also, you know, people just get this. This is the kind of stuff you just get in the Farmer's Almanac, one of the Farmer's Almanacs. I mean, there are, people realize there are several Farmer's Almanacs out there. You know, they're all set up a little differently, but they're all, you know, equally as good, interesting things. If you're in a situation where you have gone through a phase of drought, especially one where it's, you know, more than just at one season, you want to plant your seeds when the moon is waxing as close to the full moon as possible. Any grafting that you do should be done in the first or second quarter of the waxing moon. So transplanting and repotting of houseplants is the same point there. Herbs that you're gathering. If you're gathering for, you know, making some essential oils up, the oil concentration will be better and greater when they're harvested and gathered during the waxing moon. Grapes, if you're making wine, people who are winemaking, that's also the time to get the grapes harvested. And if you add water to your compost piles, that's an ideal time to be doing that, is when the moon is in its waxing phase. So now for the waning moon, things change. The below ground crops, the ones that do their activities below ground, like the beets and the carrots, the root vegetables, potatoes, all that, they should be sowed, planted when the moon is in its waning phase. Trees and sapling, the third quarter of the waning moon, because that's what's going to encourage a good strong root system. That moisture, you know, they'll seek the moisture and they'll really develop a good root system. You should be killing your weeds and thinning out any plants that you need to during this period. Same as pruning. Of course, that's a good excuse. You know, if you're in the waxing, and you say I can't kill those weeds now. It's not right time. I'll wait. I'll put it off to the waning moon. Perennials. They should be spread out between the third and fourth quarter of the waning phase of the moon. The potassium will be absorbed. If you're fertilizing with any kind of potassium supplement, that should be applied in the waning moon, because that's when it's going to be absorbed most effectively. Any harvesting for long-term storage, you know, your potatoes, your apples, your cabbage, any of those long storage crops, they should be harvested in the waning moon phases. Fruit trees can be sprayed during the fourth quarter, the very end of the waning phase, and any harvest and any storage of flowers and seeds that you want to be doing for next year's plantings, you want to harvest at the same time in the waning phase. And the herb roots, the leaves, any bark for medicinal bark, any of that stuff is done in the waning phase. And all this stuff also applies to, or all the waning stuff also applies to any kind of drying that you're doing for, you know, drying herbs or any other. Food drying, you want to do it. Actually, it actually occurs better in the waning phase of the moon. So, you know, there's scientifically, again, there's a lot of reasons why this works. And, you know, the books that you could buy have a lot more explanation, but it's always sort of interesting to see, you know, what to do and then to some extent why we're doing it. And, you know, gardening by the moon is not, you know, it's been practiced for generations. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of years, if not more. I'm really sure. I'm sure some of these go back to to biblical times. I'm positive.
Yeah, it's kind of like my all these things that, you know, like I said, Grandpa always said, don't plant before Good Friday, and oh, if the cows are laying down, we're going to get some rain. And like you were talking about, someone was talking about in the chat room about, you know, if it thunders in the wintertime, thunders and lightnings, 3 days later we're going to have a freezing temperature, a snowstorm, and you know, it's, but I, you know, a lot of them go back to like what you're talking about, studies over years and years and years and years and years. of what people have seen or documented. So it's very interesting.
Well, yeah, and like I said, it's all linked to science. I mean, it's not just the tides.
Right.
You know, the moon goes around the Earth and it doesn't stay the same distance. Its orbit is sort of elliptical and it's closer, and sometimes, as I said before, it's closer than other times. So as the moon goes through its orbit, it doesn't just cause the tides to rise and fall because of the gravitational pull, but that rise and fall and change in sea level heights and to some extent it also pulls the water table up too. It's the subsurface water, but that also affects the water currents and the air currents. So once the water and air currents are affected and changed, that is a huge factor in changing and causing the pattern of thunderstorms and good and bad weather. So you know, that brings on, I mean, there's really a reason for all this, and so when the moon causes one thing, then you can prepare for other things to happen, and that's exactly what's happening. Lakes rise, subsurface soil rises, even within the cells of the plants, that water is drawn to the surface. So it's not just old wives' tales. It's pretty pretty scientifically observable.
Since 1947, Randall Berkey has been providing quality products to their customers. They have everything you could ever want or need for backyard poultry. Feeders, waterers, medications, supplements, nesting boxes, and even coops. Visit them online at randallberkey.com and get 10% off your entire order when you use the coupon code WHISPER. That's randallberkey.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
ManaPro understands that poultry owners are as diverse as the birds they care for, which is why they offer both medicated and non-medicated starters. Whichever product you choose, you know you're getting great nutrition for your new chicks. Look for ManaPro products at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Hey ladies, do you have a hard time finding the perfect gift for that animal lover on your list? I did, but not anymore. I shop at hobbyhillfarm.com. They have a great selection of dog, cat, horse, and chicken gifts that are not only cute, but affordable too. Check them out at HobbyHillFarm.com and become a Facebook fan at Facebook.com/HobbyHillFarm to receive updates on new products and special discounts. I just know you're going to love HobbyHillFarm.com. I do.
pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
There we go. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We've been talking to Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Backcomb Magazine. Visit them online at backcombmagazine.com. You can subscribe like I do. Great, great information. Let's get over here to the, let's see what we got here. Hang on, let me pause this here in the chat room, see what we got going on here. Say hello to everybody. Yep, heading up to, April is kind of sketchy with the radio shows because of the travel schedule. It's our busy season, but we hope to be here as much as possible, Monday through Friday. And then where is Flower? Check the Facebook page, and let's see what we got here. Who's Flower? I have no idea. Anyway, send me a private message, and because I'm not sure exactly what you're talking about in the chat room, send me a private message and with more information. I don't know Flower, Kim, who you're talking about as far as Flower, unless it's a chat room or what have you there. So we'll just have to see. I think maybe. Ah, there we go. Richard is back. So, again, today we're talking with Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Backcomb Magazine. You can subscribe. Just go to backcombmagazine.com. You can give him a call, and guaranteed that your phone will be answered by someone in his office right there in the good old USA, and they will take your order. You can also order online, backcombmagazine.com. And, Richard, thanks for hanging out during the break. We appreciate you coming back. And we're continuing our talk about kind of looking at nature, letting nature decide when to plant, what we need to plant every single year, and the study behind that. And, again, we've got plenty of time, so we'll let you continue on.
Well, yeah, I pretty much, went through what I had. There may be, if there's any questions or maybe you had some, it's fun to sort of talk about what those little tidbits of wisdom might be. But, essentially, I think we're just to close up the moon conversation, I just wanted to point out that the, I think I already said, but the rainfall cycles sort of copy the tide cycles, and the when the tide cycles are affected, then the rain cycles are affected. So basically, you can actually make a note of this. Pretty generally, right after a new moon or a full moon, you'll see that your higher rainfall will occur at those points. So you can sort of almost bank on that. It may not be the same every time or whatever, but it, there will be an increase, and you can sort of count on those cycles. So that all ties in with the you know, with the planting. And some crops, some crops do better with, you know, when the roots are trying to develop, they need that water and all that kind of thing. And others do better in the coming up to the event. So it's it just depends. And as I said, some of these little signs change with region to region, but they're pretty reliable. Maybe a little different kind of a plant or whatever, but they're very similar across the across North America, and I'm sure other in Europe and other places too. We just don't know about that.
Sure. Now, if you would, because someone had posted in the chat room about reading material, you had talked about a few books earlier. If you have that in front of you, you could repeat that, and then we can wrap it up. That would be great. So they'll have some place, and maybe you can find them at your local bookstore or, of course, on Amazon. But get your pens ready, and Richard can go over the books if you're more interested in this topic, where you can learn more.
Yeah. One of the books was The Lunar Garden, Planting by the Moon Phases. And the author of that is Crawford, E.A. Crawford. And that's, the Lunar Garden.
Mm-hmm.
And another book is Living by the Moon by a fellow named York. And the other one I was thinking of that we had looked at quite a bit, it's called Raising by the Moon, Raising Crops by the Moon. And I think that's a local publisher, and I know it's a local author, but all these books, by the way, are not major publishers. They're all fairly independent, smaller publishers. So, we've got three titles, The Lunar Garden, Living by the Moon, and Raising by the Moon. And then out of the book arena, just getting into the Farmer's Almanac is a book as well, I guess, or a pamphlet. So you've got any of the one called The Farmer's Almanac. Publishes a Gardening by the Moon calendar and the other almanacs, the Harris's and some of the other ones, will have the same information or similar information in it. So whatever the almanac may be in your country store that they sell or your hardware store or whatever, pick a copy up and take a look at it. And they'll have a lot of moon, lunar information in it. And let me see, maybe a couple of a website. Let me see here. One particular website, biodynamics.com. They have a lot of information on moon phases and phenology and signs and things like that. Just the biodynamics.com website. And there are specific pages within that site, but you'll have to look for it. But once you get onto www.biodynamics.com, you'll be a good place to start looking.
Perfect. Thank you for sharing with that. And let me actually, I think, get over here and we'll tell folks here the next time that you're going to be joining us here in a couple of more weeks. We've got the topic 10 unusual uses for eggs. 10 unusual uses for eggs, and there may be more than that. So that'll be coming up here in a couple of weeks when you join us again. But until then, we hope you have an awesome awesome spring and happy planting, and we appreciate you joining us today.
Okay, Andy, we'll see everybody in 2 weeks then.
Sounds like a plan. Thank you very much for all the great information. Alrighty, and of course, we would love for you to go and visit them over at backhomemagazine.com, and take a look, because they've got great information. I subscribe out of my own pocket to the magazine. I know Pat does. It's great information, and we love to get that when it comes in the mail. It's some really good quality reading, especially now that we live on the homestead. It's all very related, and we love getting that publication. So gotta love it. Okay, so who feels lucky out there? We've got a great prize. We got a great prize to give away. Let me see what we got going on in the chat room. You know, funny folks in the chat room. I'm sorry for you folks at work that can't join us in the chat room. Many of you listen live but can't because your work's blocked the chat room. But God love it, sweet potato. So you just never know what's going to go in the chat room. Crazy. Janice is saying, pick me. You got to be the right caller. So today we've got an awesome prize. It is a brooder kit. In fact, we had somebody comment on our Facebook page that they had won the brooder kit, and it is absolutely awesome, and they love it. Today's prize, being Thursday, is brought to you by, of course, Critter-Cages.com. It's a brooder kit. It comes with a little waterer, a feeder, heat lamp bulb, the corral, everything you need for your new baby chicks you're getting this season. It's a great little brooder, valued at $42.99 plus shipping to your front door from our good friends over at Critter-Cages. Let me find it here. Critter-Cages.com.
Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today. We've got an awesome brooder kit to give away. Caller number 12 right now, 347-637-3237. Caller number 12. We had some folks on the Facebook page were like, no hard chicken trivia today, please. Or they said, no hard chicken disease riddles today, please. And so hey, guess what? Just for you, no questions, no trivia, no riddles. Just lucky fingers. Do you have lucky fingers? Do you have lucky fast fingers? Give us a call right now. Caller number 12 is going to walk away with this awesome brooder kit, 347-637-3237. If you are caller number 12, 347-637-3237, just a reminder. Well, Fiona needs a coop. Well, I know that. And so that's why we give away a coop about every other month here on the radio show. More coops than anybody else on the planet we give away. And it just so happens that this month we're having a Chicken Coops for Classrooms contest. But we will resume in June with another coop contest for all of our listeners. Yet we'll be giving away another chicken coop in June. But this month we've designated the coop for a classroom somewhere across America. And to enter, or to nominate the school of your choice, just send us an email. In the subject line of the email, put Chicken Coop Contest or Coop Contest, and send that to contest@chickenwhisperer.net. Okay, that's a new email address for this particular contest. contest@chickenwhisperer.net. Normally, when you win a prize, like the person who wins this prize here that we're about to do, just chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net. But when we do kind of the email contest for registering or for nominations, we always use this one. So contest@chickenwhisperer.net. In the subject line, put Chicken Coop Contest, and then in the email, we need the school name, the school address, the school phone number, and then a little snippet about why you think they're deserving of this awesome prize package. Fertile hatching eggs, incubator, brooder, chicken coop, an array of educational books, all going to the same school, the one school that wins this great prize. You can nominate a local, public, or private school. No homeschoolers, please. We love homeschoolers. A lot of them listen to this show, but we want to educate the masses here, not just a family of three. So we are homeschoolers ourselves, but this is to educate the masses in public or private school with students year after year after year. And so that's the thought process there. So go ahead, nominate your local school, public or private, for the contest. It's a huge and awesome prize package. It's up there probably around $700 or so, right to a local school. And we are going to be giving that away, I think, on Friday, May 4th, is when we're going to be giving away this awesome prize. But if you want to take a chance at winning this awesome brooder kit from Critter-Cages.com, go ahead and be caller number 12, 347-637-3237. 347-637-3237. You'll win this awesome brooder kit. No hard trivia, no hard riddles, no hard jokes. Just caller number 12. Fast fingers for you today. per all the comments over on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thechickenwhisper. There'll be a lot more Chickens in the News we'll be posting later this afternoon, including more information, of course, about the Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival that we'll be heading to tomorrow. So let's see what we got here. Yeah, Gary and Don, they had posted on our Facebook page, I won this brooder kit. It is awesome. Good luck to everyone today. And then Kim was like, no hard riddles, please. And so, perfect. And then, so go over there and join us on our Facebook page. Lots of great fun information. Here we go. Get back over here to the chat room. See what y'all are talking about. Trying to get a signal. Okay, Kim's trying to get a phone signal. I think she lives way, 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 way out in the country and doesn't get much of a phone signal. So keep trying. All right, let's go over here to the phone lines here. Kim says, thanks for making it easy, but I just can't get a call-out signal. Oh, my goodness. Well, Kim, this is for you. You want to win, but you just can't get a signal. Well, you know what that means.
La, 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 la.
Let's go to caller number 12 right now. Calling in area code 585. 585, you're live on the air. State your name. Tell us where you're calling from, please.
This is Janice.
Hey,
and I'm calling
Janice
from Medina, New York.
From New York, really?
Yes.
Awesome. Is that, are you like, now, you know, when us Southerners think of New York, we're thinking Manhattan. But when I went on the Chicken Whisperer tour a couple of years ago, we were in upstate New York, and it was beautiful country and farms all over the place. What part of New York?
We're in western New York, about 10 miles south of Lake Ontario, in between
okay.
Rochester and Buffalo, and it is absolutely gorgeous here.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Gotta love it. You got chickens yourself?
We do. We started, we bought our farmhouse about 5 years ago and found out it used to be a chicken farm. So we decided to get chickens, and we started out with 7 giveaways. Somebody gave us 7, and then we added 25 more, and now we've got 25 more coming, and it's addictive.
you got that right. It's definitely addicting. Yeah, it's funny. When we had a meetup meeting in Atlanta, I don't know, maybe a year or so ago, and me and Jen happened to be able to, in town to attend it, and we had a lot of new folks, and we went around the room saying, you know, tell us how long you've had chickens, how many chickens you started with, and how many chickens you have now. And so our new folks here today can figure out that they really are addicting. And it was funny because people said, well, I started out with 6, and now I have 200. You know, that was you know, a rare case, instance. But some people are like, well, we started out with our first 6, and now we've got, you know, 18. And so
yeah.
it was awesome to see that. And they are absolutely addicting. Well, congratulations. You
Thank
have
you.
Won this awesome kit from critter-cages.com, and what you need to do to claim your prize, you just got to do one more thing for me. Send me an email to chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net. chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net. Put brooder winner in the subject line, and then in the email itself, I need your name, your shipping address, your phone number, and go ahead and type in your email address so I can just forward that on over to our good friend Carl at critter-cages.com. Again, brooder winner in the subject line, name, shipping address, phone number, and email in the email itself, and then over to chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net. And so they were talking about in the chat room or something about they said, I'm going to win. No, I'm going to win. No, she's not going to win. She's going to win. And apparently they said they threw you out the window of the chat room. But I guess you ran down to the payphone and called and still made it to caller number 12. So congratulations. And I guess your experience in the wrath of the chat room. So just for you, we're going to do this again for those that wanted to throw her out the window of the chat room so she couldn't win. Looks like she did win. And here's for all you folks that threw her out of the chat room.
La, 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 la.
How about that? So lots of fun today here on the show. Lots of great information shared by Richard Frubenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. Visit them online at backhomemagazine.com. Visit us online at chickenwhisperer.com. And, of course, follow us on Facebook, facebook.com. Oh, okay, so she's climbed back into the chat room through the window now that she's won. Okay, and y'all are all welcoming her and congratulating her and having lots of great fun. Super. Got it. Oh, so they're applauding now that she won. Okay, so she won. Gotta love it. Hey, remember, folks, there's no radio show tomorrow. We'll be on the road to the Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival. We've been looking forward to that for a guy. We were booked for that almost a year ago, and so we've definitely been looking forward to this event. We'll be on the road tomorrow, so no radio show tomorrow, but we will be broadcasting live this Saturday and this Sunday, live on location from the Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival. So if you're not able to attend, then you can tune into the radio show, and we'll make it very realistic for you, so it'll kind of be like you're there. So I do not have to look at my schedule for the event, and we will schedule the radio show accordingly. So that'll be, again, no radio show tomorrow, but we will be broadcasting live on location at the Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival this Saturday and Sunday. Probably not at our regular times because I'm on four times. I've got four 30-minute segments throughout the day. Like one segment, we'll be talking about the movement of backyard poultry. One segment, we may be talking about coops. One segment, we may be talking about incubation. So, and those are spread out throughout the day. So we'll have to see my schedule a little bit close. And the sweet potato said that she wants to see the tan I got while I was at the beach last week. She wants to see if I've got overall tan lines. That's too funny. I love it. You know, it's funny. It's we're into that transitional now. Now, last year it was overalls throughout the year, but I think, in fact, I go to the cleaners today and pick them up. I think I'm going to do the shorts and shirt thing at the Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival. I think it's supposed to be around 90 degrees there, and we're going to be outside most of the day, even though we will be under the Chicken Whisperer tent and broadcasting and whatnot. But I think it's going to be shorts and a nice dress shirt that we've got, and so got to love it. So, I'll be posting the times of the show Saturday and Sunday on our Facebook page, so we'll keep you informed there. And then, of course, we will return on Monday with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. So gotta love it, and we'll see you then. Thank you very much for tuning in today, and we'll see you on Saturday. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thanks for tuning in.
Mm-hmm.